This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The short-term disruption to Michigan's K-12 education from the pandemic has been enormous. But what happens over the long term? For a conversation about the long-term outlook, this summer, the fall, and beyond, we are turning, as we do sometimes, to Stateside's education commentator, Matinga Ragatz, a former Michigan Teacher of the Year and education consultant. Matinga, nice to have you back again.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also talking today with Jessica Matthews. She teaches at Carmen Ainsworth High School in Flint. Jessica Matthews, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Let's start, Matinga, with a little 10,000-foot discussion. What do you see COVID-19 presenting to us about educational equity that maybe was less obvious before?
Well, you know, this is one thing that I think as educators all over the nation we've been talking about, and how the scab has kind of been pulled back. And suddenly we have this disparity of wants and needs. In one household, the parents want less homework because the kids are already really academic and the parents can guide that. And in another household, there are no parents, or there's not enough technology, or there's not enough food. So one of the things that teachers have been able to do through these Zoom meetings is actually have a peek into what the kids' lifestyles and the kids, like what's behind them. And it's just been a big eye opener.
Do you see, Matinga, different districts using this as an opportunity to rethink how they do things?
I hope so. I really hope that every district, and I cannot tell you how many principals just today are hustling, trying to figure out what September is going to look like.
For sure. Well, Jessica, let's turn to you. What has this meant for your students in Flint? What are you seeing through that window that Matinga talked about, the window into their lives?
I think it's been very interesting because it's very difficult to look at the window for kids in Flint, because some of the things that we think about that we automatically assume that every kid has, like every kid has technology, everyone has a device, everyone has, you know, Wi-Fi. They don't have those things. Not everyone does. So in my situation, there's some kids I can reach, some kids that I have to maybe text, some kids I'm literally spending hours trying to track down and find them. So it pretty much, with the experience with COVID, it's kind of, if I'm thinking about what Matinga said with the wound, it's like thinking about all the band-aids we've put on these wounds that are glaringly obvious that's wrong with education, and we have run out of band-aids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a philanthropic effort in Detroit to get a tablet and a Wi-Fi, some sort of Wi-Fi system in the home of every child in the Detroit Public Schools Community District. Obviously, some of that may not be in place until a little bit later this summer. And the first thing I thought was great, and the second thing I thought was, what about the rest of the state? Jessica, has there been any talk about providing technology for kids in Flint?
In my district, which in Carmen Ainsworth, we have the Chromebooks that we were using day-to-day in the classroom. Kids can check that out, but they can only check out one per household.
Right. So if they're siblings, that's a shared resource at best.
Right. If you have a house of like three kids and there's one in high school, one in middle school, one in elementary, all the different schedules that are out there, and you're trying to share one device, that's still not enough.
Yeah. What is it like for you as a teacher to move instruction online? Do you feel like you're able to connect with kids in the way that you want to?
Absolutely not. Not at all. I was not trained to be an online teacher, and my students were not trained to be online students. So when the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, you have to make this transition. You have to do it now. And we did it, as teachers do, but I don't know if I'm doing it as effectively as I can due to things that are going on in the household.
Yours, or the children's?
Yes. My household, I'm pretty good. Children, not so much. But I might say that I do know teachers who don't have like hotspots and good Wi-Fi, especially if you're in a rural kind of setting. And so I've talked to some of my friends who have got to drive to places and sit in parking lots and do their lessons.
Yeah, because that's the way they're going to actually have a durable connection that they can work with over time. Matinga, what role do you think schools can play, both as people are figuring out the mechanics of this and in terms of the broader challenges posed to families by COVID-19?
Well, one of the things that I hope that this pause has given school administrators permission to do is not to just have to come up with the solutions themselves. I think this is a phenomenal opportunity for when the kids come back, not to just go right into, okay, let's just normalize things as fast as possible, but instead, you know, allow the kids to unpack, you know, how it was living through this historic, you know, global crisis, right?
Yeah, just students sitting with it, yeah.
Right? So I'm thinking, like, students could participate in, like, surveys. They can do student panels, class discussions, you know, and categorize things that happened before the pandemic and how things that did not work before the pandemic, and maybe even come up with research-based ideas on what could work today. So the administrators cannot come up with all the solutions. They can't fix things come September, but within their walls, they have resources and kids who have ideas, things, kids who want to be a part of creating a better school and a better education opportunity for themselves.
Jessica, what do you think your students in Flint need from their schools as this pandemic continues?
I think we need to repackage everything. Everything needs to change, like Matinga is saying. I just don't see it being productive for students to go back to the way that it was 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. It's proven to be very archaic, and this pandemic has exposed the different oppressive cultures within education. So I think students from Flint and other communities similar to us need to just go, you know what, we got to rethink the whole setup. Like, let's do a rebirth of education.
Well, what are some of the fundamental questions on your mind as you think about that?
I think about, are we really going to go back to a system where they sit in a classroom for 6 hours in lunchtime? Like, is that needed? I don't see that being needed at this point. Are we going to make sure everyone has technology, teachers and students, to function? Do we really need to be in the building Monday through Friday? Like, there's so many questions that go through your head being an educator with this that you can't help but challenge and say, maybe it's a way of us restructuring and rebuilding and starting something anew.
I'd like to piggyback on what Jessica just said. And I know that a lot of administrators, a lot of parents are right now worrying about the fact that, you know, kids are going to be losing out on material that they did not learn. Maybe they're going to be behind. And come September, there's going to be a lot of catching up to do. And I'd like to just kind of, you know, just put a spotlight in a different direction and think about this, you know, whether the kids are behind or ahead. This is just like a damaging social construct that we've created. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, to control how kids learn, control how, you know, how they, what they learn and at what time they learn it. And learning is really not linear. And I would love for them to look at it as, you know, learning happens all the time, whether you want it to do or not. And there's so much content that the kids are learning in their life lessons that are not really counting, we're not counting as learning. A lot of the kids that we're talking about, you know, they have to take care of their siblings, they have to cook at home, maybe even pay bills, deal with the landlord, you know, navigate, you know, public transportation. And those things somehow are not counted as learning. And in what Jessica said, that we have to rethink things, maybe we need to rethink as well what the purpose of the assessments and what the purpose of the learning and what the purpose of school is altogether.
Yeah. Okay. There are definitely countries in the world that do have a different structure for their school week and or their school days, but they may also have a different, you know, a different system of family values that might support that. I can't help but think, Jessica, that a shiver just went up the spine of every parent, every working parent, at the thought of what that might look like. Either of you, Matinga or Jessica, are there ways to structure, you know, parents' work and parents' care for their children that might also let us think differently about education?
You know, if I may answer that question real quick, you, I think, underlined something very important, that it's just a cultural and it's a way of thinking. And I think that we, like Jessica said, this paradigm shift cannot happen all at once, obviously, because this is just too big to change all at once. But definitely the idea that school does not have to be in the same time as it was before because it's no longer practical. And the idea that, you know, maybe we are stressing content that does not directly apply to the student's current or even in some instances future lives. So if we start really thinking about learning about the stuff that's important versus the stuff that's essential, and I think in these, some of these cultures where you're talking about the parents and the communities really embracing education, is because we're focused, they're focusing on the essential and not only on the, you know, millions of pounds of content that the kids have to learn throughout 12 years. So definitely I would cut the amount of information the kids have to learn so that they can learn it in the context of becoming a better citizen, becoming a better human being.
Yeah. I mean, Americans, on paper at least, care a lot about social mobility and the idea that the academics that would get us all to a college education would be right there for the taking. But there's not that question about, you know, what kids might want for their future lives and what information might be useful to them. Either of you, do you worry that, you know, restructuring education might necessarily involve limiting opportunities for some kids? The reason I ask that is, at least I know in the European model, there's very early direction of, you know, do you have what it takes to continue on an academic path? If you don't, there's a really rigorous system of getting kids ready for trade schools or whatever it is that they want to, you know, they need to do with their lives. But it's just, it's so different than the way that, you know, college prep is sort of this foundational bedrock to everything in American education.
Right, but it has shifted, and that bedrock has shifted, right? And what I would like to just kind of add to that is that once we start thinking about what our society, what our communities need, the education model has to pivot according to that. And so we have seen that in the past 20 years, 25 years in the digital age, that our communities, our society, our companies, they need something differently, but schools have not been able to pivot at the right speed. And so I think what the pandemic has done is demonstrated that yes, indeed, as schools, we can pivot because we have done it and done it pretty well, I think, considering all the pieces that had to be moved in order for the kids to learn online. Did some things fall off the plates? They did. But we can see that we can pivot as a school system, so, or as an education construct, and look at what the society needs first, and then think about what our kids need. That would give us the why, like why they are learning what they're learning, rather than let's just learn a bunch of different things in the hopes that when you get out in the world, you will be able to use that for some reason.
Right. Absolutely. I think that it's really essential to think about, like Matinka said, we did it pretty fast. Like distance learning was done really quickly.
Right.
And dropping things like going, you know what? We are not going to push the SAT, ACT on you right now. We're not going to do that. That's not essential when we're thinking about your lives at this moment. We're not going to make you jump through every single hurdle that we usually do. And in making that shift and doing it so quickly and seeing that it works, I think it would be a huge injustice to be like, whoa, we all survived the pandemic, so let's go back to the old way.
Yes.
Like that's not fair, especially knowing that in a number of communities, especially like thinking of kids that go to Flint Community Schools and thinking about Detroit, thinking about kids who go to Carmen Ainsworth, which has some kids from the city of Flint, like if you've looked at the community and you were able to make the change that quickly to help out because we've been heavily affected by COVID, and if you just flip right back, you are showing just temporary care, which I think is even more disrespectful.
Jessica, there have been many possible scenarios talked about for how in-person instruction might resume. And I just wanted to ask, I mean, everyone who's working outside the home has, I'm sure, thought about their personal safety right now. Are you comfortable with returning to the classroom eventually?
As of right now, I'm pretty comfortable where I am now. I am more terrified about the fall. There's just so many unknowns. And to just hop up and say, we're just going to go back and do face-to-face learning, it scares me. I have no problem saying that. I don't know how many kids will be in my class. Because technically, most of the time, I have a class of 31. I have three classes of 31 right now.
Right.
So if I go and switch with distance, from distance learning to going to face-to-face, saying we have to have social distancing that limits the number of kids in my class, that limits the contact I can have with them. I don't know how you deal with hallways. I don't know how you come in a building, how you do lunch. How do I give work back to kids? How do I help a kid? A lot of times kids and teachers come to school sick. Like, it's common.
Right.
So for me, there's just so many different questions of how do I keep myself safe and how do I keep my kids safe, that in the fall for me to just go and just walk back in the classroom, it would be really tough. I have no problem saying that. We have to have a lot of discussions on what's best for everyone before we head back into the classroom.
Matinga, as we wrap this up, can you peel back the curtain a little bit? What do you see going on behind the scenes? Is this going to be an entire summer of planning and full-time work and discussion by administrators to figure out what should happen next?
Most definitely. And like Jessica hinted, there's so many different combinations that administrators are thinking about. Now, do we split the school in half so kids are coming in half a day? Are they coming in on Monday and Wednesday and the other half on Tuesday and Thursday? There are so many different combinations that are going to take place. But one of the things that we know really well is that a digital environment needs to be used and used well. And we can use it and it can support it. Because come September, teachers will go from being digital essential workers to physical essential workers. And for the sake of our kids, we will be there. And that's what the teachers do. We just, we show up. And so, yeah, we are afraid, but we'll show up. And I can tell you this much. Administrators are losing sleep trying to figure out what September is going to look like. However, we do have hints from countries that have already gone through it and countries that are now reopening. So there's a lot of unpacking to do. There's a lot of research to do. And there's a lot we need to do to make sure our kids are protected and education continues.
Matinga Ragatz is an education consultant, a past Michigan Teacher of the Year, and Stateside's education commentator. We've also heard the voice of Jessica Matthews, a teacher at Carmen Ainsworth High School in Flint Township. She is also, by the way, Teacher of the Year this year for Region 5. That's the thumb for those of you consulting your map at home. Ladies, thank you both so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.